Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. In this hour, Crime, later on from Dragnet from 1953. But first, The Whistler, with the story Man in the Storm, a CBS radio broadcast from February 18th, 1951.
Always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In The Whistler.
Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for The Whistler, rated by independent research, the most popular West Coast program in radio history. And now, The Whistler's strange story. Man in the Storm.
The storm had been raging for 2 days. A solid downpour, overflooding the storm drain, inundating town after town, particularly Grove Landing, where the fury of its violence seemed to center. The river, which usually wound around Grove Landing so caressingly, had turned into an overflowing, uncontrollable force. The townspeople, lining the banks with hastily filled sandbags, had the assistance of a group of soldiers and army engineers. Engineers rushed to the area at the request of the governor, but it was a losing battle. The rushing floodwaters were winning, even now threatening to sweep away the town recreation center, a building placed precariously close to the river's edge. Some of the men were giving up in spite of the excited, shouted orders they received from one man who was working waist-deep in the mire, struggling tirelessly as if possessed. He kept on as the others withdrew, almost failed to look up or listen as someone shouted to him over the tumult. But at last he did respond and waded in toward the bank.
Please, will you listen? Please, the mayor!
The mayor? Why isn't he down here fighting this thing, Cal? We could lick it if only everybody...
Never mind, the mayor is here, and he wants to see you right away.
Oh?
Yeah, he's across the road there in that army car.
What's the deal?
I don't know. The city engineer's with him, and they're having some sort of meeting, I guess, with an officer from the army engineers.
I better get over there, then.
Uh-huh.
Take my place, will you, Cal? We can whip this.
Maybe you can, Reed. I'm for waiting this storm out. It's too risky now.
Go on, stay with it.
Well, okay, but just till you get back.
Atta boy, Pete. Get that load of sandbags to him.
Well, there you are, Reed.
Mr. Mayor.
Reed? Lieutenant Avery, Army Engineer. Lieutenant? Reed Gordon, our city treasurer.
Lieutenant?
How do you do?
You know City Engineer Hollister, of course?
Hello, Hollister.
You look kind of used up, Reed.
No, I'm all right.
Now, to get to the point quickly. Lieutenant Avery's been giving us some advice, Reed. A good advice, I feel. And we're prepared to take it. I just wanted you to know.
Wanted me to know what?
Well, I know how you're going to take this. I've been watching the fight you've been making out there, but... Well, Reed, the simple fact of the matter is that in... Well, in Hollister and the lieutenant's opinion...
They don't want us to give up here.
I think it's the only thing to do, Mr. Gordon.
Me too, Reed. We ought to move farther down the river. Stay at a narrower point.
But we can't. It's like pushing the recreation hall into the river. We can't do that.
These gentlemen feel that letting the recreation building go, well, is the surest way to save the town. The town is a lot more important than the recreation building. Oh, I know how you feel about the recreation hall, Reed, but...
But you're going to let them do this. Is that it?
That's exactly it. I'm not letting anyone do anything that I don't think is for the best. They're qualified engineers, Reed. And after all...
But that building is the town, Mayor Wilson. You know what it means, how the school kids save their nickels and dimes to help build it. We can't let it go like this.
Well, we've got to abandon this position, Reed. Save all this effort and material for a spot where it will do some good.
Check. Just give up.
Let the recreation hall go into the river.
Reed, we know how you feel. That hall was your baby, but we haven't any choice.
No? Well, go ahead then, Mayor. You may not have any choice, but I have. I'm going on with this right here.
Reed, just a moment. Reed!
Yes, Reed, you're going on with it. Not letting any of them stop you prevents you from doing everything humanly possible to prevent the floodwaters from toppling the recreation building into the river. It isn't long before you find yourself virtually alone at the river's edge, doggedly struggling to drag the few remaining piles of sandbags into position. You work frantically for several hours until you feel as if you're going to drop. And then as you wade back through the waters to shore and drop down from exhaustion, you hear a familiar voice.
Reed.
Look up to find that your wife, Margaret, is at your side.
Reed, please. You've got to give this up. Come home and get some rest.
No, I'll rest right here. In a few minutes, I've got to tackle it again, Margaret. You've got to understand that.
Don't you think everyone understands, dear? They know how you worked to get the recreation building in the first place, but... Oh, Reed, it's no use.
Maybe you're right. But I'm worn out.
Of course you are. Go home, dear, please. Everyone understands.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they do. All right, Margaret, I guess I'm licked. I'll see you back at the house.
You feel beaten, don't you, Reed? And the thought of what it means creates a strange feeling of numbness, something not caused by your weariness. And driving through the flooded streets of Grove's Landing, you decide you've got to talk to someone. Get it all off your chest. And so instead of going home, you pull up in front of an apartment building, get out of the car, and hurry upstairs.
Reed.
Hello, Claire.
Come in, darling. Sit down. I'll get you a drink or something. You don't look well.
No, I'm licked, Claire. Beat clean through. The river's caught up with me.
What are you saying?
Claire, you know that money we've been playing around with hasn't come entirely from my job as city treasurer.
Honey, I don't know what you mean.
Okay. Okay, so even as my secretary, there are things you don't know about. Claire?
Huh?
You've said that you love me.
And I do.
Sure, but how much? How much after I tell you about that recreation building, why I was down there fighting the river, trying to hold the flood back with my bare hands?
I don't care, Reed. I don't care what you tell me.
No? Well, Claire, that building's supposed to be fully insured. But if that building falls, Reed Gordon, the city treasurer, falls with it.
Reed!
Yeah, sure, you've guessed it. I never took out any insurance. I've been pocketing all the premiums since the day they laid the cornerstone.
Oh, Reed, no!
Yeah, and that's just part of it. If you ever take a good look at the books, they'll find other discrepancies, too. Lots of them.
Reed.
Do you still love me?
Of course I do. Well, don't worry, darling. We'll find a way out of this.
Now back to the Whistler.
Yes, Reed. The storm with its heavy rainfall has fallen the river near Grove's Landing to the point where the town is seriously threatened. But more important, there is a dread danger that Grove's Hall, the recreation building, will topple into the floodwaters and be destroyed. Grove's Hall, the building you campaigned for 5 years ago, Reed, the building you helped design, the building upon which you were supposed to have taken out all coverage insurance. But as city treasurer, you were in a position to omit this item because you were so certain that nothing could happen to Grove's Hall. But now the storm is reaching out to destroy the building and you. Back home alone, you can't think of any way to prevent it or the avalanche of investigation that would follow. Finally, you begin to see a way out. You stop pacing the floor and call your wife.
Margaret.
Yes, Reed?
What about the recreation building? Have you heard anything?
No, but don't worry. You've done all you can. Besides, the building is insured.
Margaret, I...
Yes, dear?
Nothing. You're right, of course. Worrying about the building isn't going to help. If it's going down the river, well, it's going down the river, that's all.
There's always a slim chance it won't.
No, it's doomed, Margaret. Only a matter of hours. The important thing right now is the town. We've got to save it, and I should be doing my bit.
Nonsense, dear. You haven't had any sleep in 36 hours. You need your rest. Now, please, forget the river. Going back there
I could help without going to the river.
What do you mean?
Margaret, I've got an idea. I'm going to drive down to Fairview.
Now? But, Reed, it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, I know.
Why on earth do you want to go to Fairview?
Jess Morton, you remember? He owns a construction company. I've done him a favor or two in the past, and now it's his time to do one for me.
I don't understand.
I'm going to see if I can talk him into sending some of his heavy equipment up here. It's our one chance to save Grove's Landing.
Well, couldn't you phone him?
Oh, you forget, Margaret. The lines are down.
Perhaps they've been repaired. Let me try.
No. No, never mind. I'd rather talk to Jess in person.
But, dear,
I'm leaving, Margaret. Right now.
You've made up your mind, haven't you, Reed? Yes. Suddenly it all became quite clear to you what you must do. It's your one chance now. You hurry from the house, drive into town through the heavy downpour, finally stop in front of Claire's apartment building, enter the front door and walk to her apartment and ring her doorbell.
Who is it?
Reed. Let me in.
Darling, what's the matter? The building hasn't...
No, not yet.
Oh. What is it?
I'm on my way to Fairview.
Fairview?
To see if I can talk my old friend Jess Morton into sending some heavy equipment up here. At least that's what I told Margaret.
Oh? You have other plans?
Yes. I just came to say goodbye, Claire. I'm leaving.
Leaving?
But not in the direction of Fairview. I'm headed north. By the time the building collapses and they get around to checking up on the insurance, I'll be miles away.
And you came to say goodbye. Well, you won't have to.
What?
I'm going with you.
Oh, now, wait a minute,
I'm
Claire.
Going.
No, you don't have to, you know. You're not involved in this thing in any way.
I couldn't stay on here in Grove's Landing without you, Reed.
You don't know what you're letting yourself in for.
I know about the insurance premiums you haven't paid, the city's books that won't bear investigation. What else is there to know?
It isn't pretty, Claire. Ever hear of Donetti, Mario Donetti?
The racquetball? Vaguely, yeah.
I've done him favors, the big payoffs. I'm in up to my neck. When this thing breaks, he'll be gunning for me, too. He'll kill me on sight.
Reed, why did you get...
I said it wasn't pretty.
I'm going with you, Reed. No matter what, I have to be with you.
Oh, you're wonderful, Claire. I didn't expect this.
We'll make it all right. The two of us. We'll go somewhere far away. Oh, they'll never find us. Never.
Okay. If you're sure. Now you better get your things. We haven't got much time.
Do if anyone saw us running out like this.
No one's going to see us. They're all down at the river. I passed the city hall on the way over to your apartment. Black as pitch there. It's a good thing, too.
What do you mean?
Because I'm making a stop at the city hall, Claire. We're going to need some extra money, you and I.
Oh, Reed, you wouldn't...
What difference is a few more $1,000 going to make now, after all I've done? Believe me, this money will mean more to us than it will to Grove's Landing.
Yeah, but it's risky, Reed.
Sure it is. So is running away, but we're doing it because we have to. That is, I have to. It's not too late to change your mind, Claire.
You know my answer, Reed. It'll never change.
All right, darling. And don't worry. It won't take long to get the money out of the safe. And we'll be on our way.
You park on the dark and deserted side street for the city hall. Claire keeps the motor running while you use your key to open the side door. And once inside, you hurry along the familiar dark halls until you come to your own office. You take a flashlight from the top drawer of your desk, move for the wall safe, and quickly click off the combination. The flashlight leads you to the packet of bills you're looking for. Several thousand dollars, Reed. Enough to take you and Claire far away from Grove's Landing. You close the safe and rush back to the car.
Everything all right, Reed?
Perfect, darling. Now let's get out of town.
We're headed north. Aren't you being a little careless?
What do you mean?
The bridge. We've got to cross it to get out of town, and there's a roadblock. Police checking all cars. They'd remember us.
We're not going over the bridge.
There's another way?
The quarry. Upriver about 3 miles. The big barge tied up there. It's used to haul trucks across the river.
But how could...
We'll just drive the car onto the barge, get across the river, and we're on our way.
What about the night watchman?
He was down at the river when the others, when I left. Chances are he still is.
And if he isn't?
Well, we'll just have to take that chance. I wish this infernal rain would stop.
Oh, don't let that bother you, Reed. Just think. Every minute we're getting farther from Grove's Landing. You and I, Reed. Oh, I like that. I don't care if it rains forever.
I guess you're right, Claire. We'll start all over. The three of us.
Three of us?
You and I and... the city's money.
Of course. I'd almost forgot.
Yes, it'll be wonderful. No more recreation buildings, no more...
No more what, darling?
There's a car following us. Looks like a state patrol car.
Oh, no. Reed, you've got to drive fast.
I can't. I'm right at the speed limit now.
But they can't have found out about the money so soon.
I don't know how, but they must have.
He's gaining on us.
Yes, I know.
Where did he come from?
I don't know, but... Here he comes alongside. Keep your head now.
Oh, Reed.
It's okay, Claire. He drove right past us.
The road to the quarry is narrow and muddy, and you're forced to drive carefully, slowly. When you arrive, the quarry seems deserted. You drive your car aboard the heavy steel barge and then prepare to cast off. As you're trying to start up the motor...
Come on.
Reed!
What's the matter?
Back there, the watchman's shack, a light.
Yeah, he would have to come back.
Hurry, Reed, hurry. Get it started.
That's what I'm trying to do. Ah, there it goes.
You breathe a sigh of relief as the heavy barge moves out into the river. That was close, wasn't it, Reed? A little too close. The night watchman might have ruined everything for you. The crossing takes only a matter of minutes. And then as you reach the other side, Claire drives the car off the barge. You shut down the motor. And as you do...
Get down!
Are you all right?
Yes, yes.
Get out of here. Oh, I didn't like those shots, Reed.
I'm afraid old Pop Willis takes his job too seriously. He could have killed us.
You don't think he recognized us? Or the car, do you?
In this darkness? Of course not. Relax, honey. We're okay now.
I sort of dozed off.
You've been sound asleep for over an hour.
Where are we, darling?
How about 75 miles away from Grove's Landing?
Well, we have been traveling. Reed, it stopped raining.
Uh-huh. Look up there. Stars are out.
Oh, what do you know? Storm's over, huh?
Yeah, it looks that way. At least in this region of this. How about some coffee,
huh? I love it.
We'll pull into that place up ahead there.
Fine. Reed, about the storm.
Yeah?
Do you suppose by any chance the recreation building...
I've been wondering the same thing. We'll have to be sure, very sure. Well, come on, Claire.
Howdy.
Good morning.
Yeah, what'll it be, folks?
Coffee. Or would you like some breakfast, darling?
Nope. Coffee will be fine.
Right. Well, looks like she's all over with, huh? Storm, I mean.
Yeah, it looks that way.
According to the Weather Bureau, it is.
No?
Yep. Heard it on the news about 15 minutes ago. River ought to start going down pretty soon.
Well, that is good news.
Yep. Sure had folks up and down this valley worried for a while, it did. Things sure look bad.
Yeah, so I understand.
Oh, yeah. Here's your cream.
Oh, thanks.
Funny thing about that storm. It real sudden-like. Goes out same way. Just like that.
Do you have a telephone, him?
Yep. Right back there. Help yourself.
Thanks.
Operator?
Operator, would you give me 170 Grove's Landing, please?
Deposit 35 cents for 3 minutes, please.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello, Margaret?
Oh, Reed, where are you?
On the highway. I just heard the news about the storm. It's really over, eh?
Yes, it's all over. And you don't have to worry about your precious building anymore. The mayor called me only a few minutes ago. He and the city engineer went down to look it over. It's still standing in the dangerous path.
Well, that's fine, Margaret. I guess I'll start back home now, huh?
Be careful on the road.
Don't worry. I will, Margaret. Goodbye.
Well?
Everything's fine. Just fine, Claire.
Reed, you mean the...
I mean the building's okay. The danger's past. We can go back to Grove's Landing now.
Oh, Reed. This money. Money you took from the safe tonight. You'd have to get it back somehow.
Yeah, don't worry about that. I'll stop by City Hall when we get back to town. Nobody will ever know we borrowed the money, even for a little while. We're okay, Claire. There's not a thing to worry about. Another thing.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. And now back to the Whistler.
Well, Reed, the storm is over, and its threat to the recreation building is gone with it. The panic within you is gone, too, isn't it? And you're certain you're in the clear now, free to return to Grove's Landing. But you've made up your mind to see to it that the building is going to be properly insured from now on. You're not going to take another chance, are you? Go through the torture of the past 2 days again. No, you're going to play it safe. Somehow, you'll even dissolve your connection with Mario Donetti, even though it will mean losing that easy money. But a man in your position as city treasurer, well, it shouldn't be too difficult to arrange another profitable sideline. It's almost dawn when you arrive at Grove's Landing. Drop Claire off at her apartment. Then, on your way home, you see the lights are on in the mayor's office, and you decide to drop in for a chat.
Well, good morning, Mayor.
Morning, Reed. Just get back from Fairview?
Yes.
Good. Glad you dropped by. Got to leave for the county seat in a little while. Want to check our insurance with you.
Insurance? What insurance?
Oh, that's right, that's right. You've been out of town. Yeah, I guess you didn't come in by the river. Or else you'd have seen for yourself. Now, you didn't know that... Reed, I don't know how to tell you this. Just take a look out the window.
What? The recreation building?
Yeah. Toppled over into the river. A total loss.
But what happened? I talked to Margaret on the phone around 3 this morning, and she says that...
Didn't happen. Shortly after 4.
But the storm, it was all over.
No, it wasn't a storm, Reed. You see, last night, someone stole a quarry barge a few miles up the river. Took it across. When they left it, they didn't tie it up properly.
The barge?
Yeah. Got away. Picked up momentum on its way downstream. Finally crashed into the pilings supporting the recreation building. And toppled it into the river. Whoever's responsible will pay for this, Reed. I promise you. Now, let's take a look at that insurance.
Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS radio broadcast from the 18th of February, 1951. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now it's time for a broadcast of Dragnet with the story The Big Steal, which would later be seen in a television episode in January of 1957, but first heard in this NBC and Armed Forces Radio Service broadcast from December 29th, 1953.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to burglary detail. You get a call that a clothing store in Hollywood is suffering losses. The value of the stolen property is over $12,000. There's no lead to the identity of the thief. No pattern to his M.O. Your job, get him.
It was Wednesday, June 3rd. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of burglary detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Bernard. My name's Friday. We were on our way out from the office, and it was 9:56 a.m. when we got to 1592 Vine Street, Dodd's men's store. Excuse me?
Yeah?
Wonder if you can tell us where you find Leonard Dodd's?
That's him, fella back there in the blue suit.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know how it happened, honey. No, I just came in this morning and I noticed the stuff was gone. Well, a whole shipment of suede coats. Haven't even been unpacked yet. Yeah, about 24 of them. Were white with a button-down collar. Yeah, I called the cops and the insurance company. Yeah. Well, about 12,000. Well, a couple of customers just came in, honey. I'll call you back. Yeah. Well, don't worry about it. Yes, sir? Can I help the gentleman?
Mr. Dodds?
That's right.
Police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
How do you do, sir?
You reported a burglary this morning?
Yeah, you guys from Hollywood?
No, sir. We're out of Central.
I didn't think I'd seen you around here before.
You want to tell us what happened?
Yeah. Come on back to the storeroom.
When did you first discover the theft?
Well, this morning when I came in, I went back here to unpack some new merchandise, and I found most of it gone. Here, I'll get the door. Now, this is our storeroom. And we get a shipment from the east. The cases are kept here until we get a chance to unpack them and check the invoices.
I see. Was all of the stolen merchandise taken from this room?
I'm not sure about that. I do know that a shipment of suede jackets and waistcoats was in here. It's gone now. A couple of cases of shirts, too. The only way I'd have of knowing if they took anything from out in the store itself would be to make a complete inventory.
Mm-hmm. What do you estimate the loss at?
$12,000.
When was the last time you saw the merchandise in here?
Yesterday afternoon.
About what time?
Well, I'd have to guess at that. I'd say about 3 or 3:30.
How many doors are there to the store here?
Just the front one. One in the back. Opens into an alley.
What if we could see the rear door?
Sure. Back this way. One of the first things I thought of, too, but it was locked.
You opened the door this morning, did you?
Yes, I found the stuff gone, then I checked the door. It was still locked.
Uh-huh.
You have an alarm system in the store?
Yes. Didn't go off last night, though.
I see.
Here's the door. You can see for yourself there's nothing wrong with the lock.
How about it, Joe?
No, there's no signs of a Jimmy.
Well, that's what I thought, too. I looked pretty close. Couldn't see any sign of where they got in.
How about windows?
Hmm?
Possible they got in through a window?
No, I'm sure of that. Only two we've got are in the tailor shop. Here. Now, you can see them up there. A good 10 feet and barred. They couldn't have gotten in there.
All right, we'll have our crime lab take a look.
Who has keys to the place?
Well, I've got one.
Yes, sir, but who else?
Well, there's just me and Al.
Al?
Yeah, Al Baker. He's sort of the assistant manager. Whenever I'm not around, he takes charge of things.
Can we see him?
Well, you can when he comes in. Listen, I don't want you to give him any trouble. I'd trust him with anything, anything at all. I don't want you asking him a lot of embarrassing questions.
All right, sir. How long has he worked for you?
Oh, I guess it's been about 5 years. I don't think I could run the place without him. Sure wouldn't want to try.
I see. Besides this Baker, how many people do you have working for you in the store?
3 others full-time. During rush periods, I call in extra help.
Can you give us a list of their names?
Yes. But you can be sure of one thing.
What's that?
Isn't anybody who works at the store did this.
You seem pretty sure about that.
Well, I know my people. All of them have been with me for a couple of years. I trust them all.
I noticed that you're doing some remodeling here. How about the workmen? Possible one of them took the merchandise?
Mr. Friday, do you know how much $12,000 in clothes is?
Yes, sir, I have an idea.
The both of you couldn't carry it in one trip. Not in a couple of trips. Whoever took those clothes was here a long time, and he worked hard getting them out of the store.
Yes, sir, but about the workmen?
It couldn't have been one of them. None of them have keys to the place. We have to open up to let them in, and they leave before we close. They tried to get the things out of the store. One of us would have seen it. Couldn't possibly have been one of them.
Frank?
Yeah?
You want to call the crime lab?
Sure. Can I use your phone?
Yes. It's on the counter in front of the store. I just don't understand it.
Sir?
This doesn't seem to be any way they could have gotten all of the clothes out. No way at all.
Well, they must have found one. 10:38. The crew from the crime lab arrived and went over the place. The whole store was checked, and all entrances and exits of the store were checked for fingerprints. Both the front door and the rear exit were examined, but there was no mark of a Jimmy. The windows on the second floor were gone over, but the locks on them were secure, and there was no apparent way they could have been used to remove the stolen merchandise. We talked to the other clerks in the store. From them, we got approximately the same story that we'd obtained from the store manager. They verified that the merchandise had been on the premises at 3:30 p.m. the day before. None of them could say for certain that it was there after that, however. While Frank was checking with the members of the crew from the crime lab, I called the names of the employees into the record bureau for a check.
Yeah, that's Baker, B-A-K-E-R, WMA, 46 years, 5 feet 10 inches tall, 156 pounds.
Right.
What?
No. No, no visible marks of scars.
Right. Joe, I got something for you.
Okay, if you'll check the names, I'll give you a call later.
Right.
What do you got?
Come on upstairs. I got talking to Lee. I figured from what they found, the merchandise had to be taken out in the daytime.
Lee goes along with that?
Yeah. The way the doors look, if they were open, somebody used a key.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks like we do, that somebody took the cases out, planted them, then picked the stuff up last night.
Well, what do you got up here?
The window that opens out on the roof of the next building. You check the lock. It hasn't been tampered with.
Yeah.
Come on. Climb up.
No bars on this one, huh?
Over here. Right there behind the air shaft.
Now, what is it?
Take a look.
Shirts.
And this one? Suede coats.
Is this all that was taken?
No. Manager says it's about half.
No sign of the rest of it, huh?
No. Must have taken that last night. Figures the thief will be back tonight for the rest.
Well, it'll be here.
Mm-hmm.
So will we. We asked the manager of the clothing store to keep watch on the cases of stolen merchandise while we made arrangements to place a stakeout on them. 12:14 p.m. The crime lab finished their investigation, and Frank and I talked with Lee Jones. He told us that he checked the fingerprints found on the doors and windows, but that all of them had been eliminated as they belonged to the members of the store staff or to the workmen. He told us that they found an impression of a tire print in the dirt of the alley next to the building where the stolen clothing had been found. He went on to say that they'd checked and had found that the truck belonging to the plaster contractor had tires of the same type that had left the impression. The canvas was made of the tenants in the building next to the clothing store, but they could give us no new information on the possible identity of the thief. 3:52 p.m. We checked back with the record bureau on the list of names of store employees.
Yeah. When was that? How long? You get out clean? Mm-hmm. Nothing on the rest of them, huh? Yeah. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Anything?
Yeah. They checked the names, came up with one possible.
Yeah.
The assistant manager, Al Baker.
Yeah.
He's done time for burglary.
The Record Bureau had come up with the information that Alfred Roger Baker had been arrested in 1943 for burglary. He'd been tried and convicted on three counts. He'd spent a term in the state penitentiary at San Quentin, and he'd been released. Since that time, he apparently had led the life of an exemplary citizen. 4.07 p.m., Frank and I took him to the office of the clothing store to talk to him.
Sit down, Baker.
Sure. What's this all about? You don't think I had anything to do with this burglary, do you?
How many times have you been arrested?
Why do you ask that?
We just want an answer.
You seen the record?
We've seen it.
You know without me telling you.
We'd like to hear it from you.
I was arrested once. I did the time. I'm clean since then. I thought when you did the time and they let you out, you didn't owe anybody anything.
Yes, that's right.
Well, what are you guys hopping on me for? I just work here. I mean, just because I did a hitch for burglary, that I had anything to do with this.
We didn't say you did.
Well, you're sure acting like I did, bringing me in here, talking about how I was arrested. Sure acting like you think I had something to do with this one.
Well, you look good for it.
Well, how do you figure that?
You got the only other key to the door.
Look, I don't like to bring this up. Maybe you bright cops haven't thought about it, but who says Dodds couldn't have done it himself?
What do you mean?
Well, he's in trouble, big trouble. This would be an easy way out of it.
All right, you tell us.
Well, all the stuff is insured. It'd be pretty sweet for him to lift the merchandise, collect on the insurance, and then sell the stuff, too. He'd come out real good.
That's the way you got it figured, huh?
I'm not trying to figure it anyway. All I know is that you guys are trying to wrap something around me that doesn't fit, and I want no part of it. Come right down. It must be a couple of guys work here could have done it.
Well, the way we got it, the thief used a key.
Well, that brings us right back to Dodds.
Well, if he's in trouble financially, then why is he doing all this remodeling?
He hasn't got much choice. He's got to brighten this place up, or he's going to lose what business he's got. You check into him. You look it up. You'll see what I'm talking about. It makes a lot more sense than you hauling me in here.
Can you account for your time last night?
From when?
From the time you left here.
Yeah, I can give you every minute.
All right, go ahead.
I left here at 6:30. That's the time I always leave.
Who was here when you left?
You mean who locked up?
That's right.
Leonard, he always locks up, always.
Where'd you go after you left?
Went up to the corner and had a beer. That's like always, too.
Anybody in the bar know you?
Yeah, the bartender and the waitress.
They'll vouch for you?
Sure they will.
All right, go ahead.
After I left there, I drove home.
What time did you leave the bar?
About 7:10. I had one beer, smoked two cigarettes, put a nickel in the nut machine on the bar and went home. I left at 7:10. I sure wish I knew you were going to want to know all this. I'd have been more careful about remembering. I forgot how many nuts I got from the machine. I'll take a wild guess and say 14. I got no way of proving that. You'll have to take my word for it.
What time did you get home?
About 7:50.
Where do you live?
Out in the valley. Traffic's heavy going out at the pass that time, and it took me 10 minutes longer than it usually does.
You prove when you got home?
Yeah, I can.
How?
Talk to my wife. We got a time clock on the wall just as you come in the door. I punch in and out. The time will be there.
What about last night?
I was home all night. I had dinner, sat around to watch television, went to bed.
You didn't leave your house, huh?
No, not from the time I got home last night until I left this morning. Pretty bad, isn't it?
How do you mean that?
I can prove every minute of it. Look, you get off my back, cop. You start looking around, you'll come up with a lot of guys who had a lot more chance and a lot more reason to heist that stuff than I do. That won't be hard because I haven't got any. You sit tight and I'll show you who sold that stuff.
Huh?
Wait a minute.
Where are you going?
Just over to the desk. I want to show you something.
What?
You'll see.
Hold it just a minute. Now you show me what you want, and I'll get it for you.
Hey, you cops, you never learn, do you? Open the top drawer.
This one?
Yeah.
All right.
Now open that one.
All right, what do you want?
A folder right there.
This one?
Yeah, that's the one. Put it up on the desk.
All right.
Go on, open it.
Yeah?
Now take a good look at the reason the stuff was stolen.
What is it, Joe?
Bills. There isn't anything in the store that's paid for. Take a look at them yourself. Here. Look here. Past due. Please remit. Your credit is important. Overdue. Past due. Go through the rest of them. They're all like that. There isn't a place in the country anymore that'll extend any credit to Dodds. Not one. You're looking for somebody who had a reason to steal the stuff? Well, there's your answer. You talk to Leonard Dodds. He's got the reason.
Come in.
Joe. Thanks. See you a minute.
I'll take it.
Okay.
Telling you, you got to lean on somebody. You lean on Leonard Dodds. He's the one. Don't come around here bothering me.
Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you got?
He might be telling the truth.
Huh?
Stuff on the roof.
Yeah.
It's gone.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
With the removal of the remaining packages on the roof, our main opportunity of catching a thief was gone. We questioned the people in the store about it. From them, we learned that the manager, Leonard Dodds, had brought the cases of clothing into the store himself
We talked to him, and he offered as an explanation the fact that the insurance company wouldn't like him leaving a supply of expensive suede coats up on the roof. He went on to say that catching the thief was our business, that we were not to interfere with his running of the store in any attempt to apprehend them. We tried to question him regarding the accusations made by the salesman, Al Baker. He said they were ridiculous and that we should know better than to listen to the accusations made by an ex-convict. He went on to say that he resented the questions we put to him and that if we intended to continue, he would have to get in touch with his lawyer. We contacted the office and made arrangements for a stakeout to be set up on the roof of the building next door, and then Frank and I returned to the office to check further on Leonard Dodds. We checked with his bank, and we found that he had several notes on the clothing store. The head of the loan department told us that Dodd's payments had been irregular, and that at the time, he was overdue on one of the notes. We contacted the insurance company and found that Dodds had made a claim on the stolen merchandise that morning and had requested payment as soon as possible. We turned a list of the stolen articles over to pawn shop detail and asked them to see that the information would get into the hands of the second-hand dealers in the city. 10:15 p.m., Frank and I filled out the log and prepared to leave the office.
You about ready?
Yeah, I'll be right with you.
I got it.
Burglary Friday.
Yes, ma'am.
Hmm? Well, I'm not sure. No, the officer that handled the case isn't here right now. I wonder if I could take a message. Yes, ma'am. He'll call you when he gets in. All right, uh-huh. Yes, all right. If you'll wait just a minute, I'll transfer to the main jail. No, the main jail. They'll probably be able to tell you. Yes, that's right. Just a minute. Hold on, please. Would you give this call to 2949, please? That's right, the bail clerk. Thank you. The woman wants to know how much it's going to cost to get her husband out of jail.
Yeah.
I got it. Burglary Friday. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right, we did. Yeah. Well, when was that? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay, we'll wait here. Right, bye. Well, looks like we got it made, maybe.
What do you mean?
Radio car out in the Westlake District just picked up a couple of kids.
Uh-huh.
Both of them were loaded down with clothes.
Yeah.
Label on them is Dodd's Clothing. The radio car officer had told me on the phone that he and his partner, while making a routine patrol of the area, had spotted two boys walking down the streets carrying large quantities of clothing. When they were stopped, the two suspects were unable to account for the clothes, and they were not able to tell the arresting officers where they'd gotten them. In checking the pair out, the officers had called burglary detail, and we'd gotten our first concrete lead to the thief. 10:47 p.m., the two suspects arrived at the office. Their names were checked through R&I, and they were both found to have misdemeanor records listing petty theft and attempted burglary. One of them, Walter Kramer, had been convicted on burglary charges and had been sentenced to Preston School for Boys. He was at the time on parole. While the other boy waited in the squad room, Frank and I questioned Kramer in the interrogation room.
How old are you?
18.
Where do you live?
You know that already. What are you asking me again for? I told the other cop, gave him all the information.
Where do you live?
2574 Brandon Street.
You want to tell us where you got the clothing you had when you were picked up?
You're smart cops. You figure it out.
You on parole now?
No, I got out clean.
Are you still that way?
That depends on how you read this one.
Where'd you get those things?
I found them.
You expect us to buy that?
I don't care if you buy it or not. It's the truth.
You're pretty heavy, aren't you?
I've been around.
That time up at Preston didn't do you much good, did it?
You'd be surprised what I learned up there.
Not what you were sent there for.
That depends on where you're sitting.
You were picked up carrying a load of stolen clothes.
You want to tell us where you got them?
You tell me.
Now, come on, kid. Where'd you get the clothes?
You're going to play it that way, are you?
There ain't any other.
Where were you yesterday?
Starting when?
From when you got up.
I got to tell you all that?
We want to hear it.
Pretty dull.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I got up about noon.
You got a job?
Yeah.
Where?
Around.
What do you do?
Nothing. I'm a philosopher. I study people. I just sit around all day and study people.
How do you live?
Stay with my folks. They pick up the tab.
Go ahead.
With what?
What you did yesterday?
Told you, I got up about noon. Had some breakfast, then went over to Harry's.
That's the boy you were picked up with?
Yeah, I went over to his house, sat around and watched the television.
How long were you at his house?
Maybe six. Sat around and talked philosophy. Talked and watched the old movies.
What'd you do then?
Left and went out to study people.
Where'd you go?
Went down, played a couple of games of pool, had something to eat.
And after that?
Went out to a movie.
You got any way of proving that?
Sure, talked to Harry.
See your alibi?
Yeah, you talk to him, he'll tell you.
Now, you may not know this, but he's in the theft as deep as you are.
I got some information for you, cop. Neither one of us is in on it at all.
All right, get your coat.
Where are you taking me?
City jail.
You gonna book me?
You called it.
How about Harry?
Well, how about him?
He going too?
Yeah.
What charge?
Suspicion 459 PC.
Burglary?
That's right. Come on.
You mean that stuff is really stolen?
That's right.
You're telling me right?
Yep.
It ain't true.
You tell us about it.
No, I mean,
Harry and me didn't steal the stuff, but at least not the first time.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we stole it, yeah. You got us cold for that, but not the first time.
Well, where'd you get it?
From a garage, that's the truth. We stole the stuff from a garage.
Where is the place?
I'll show you. There's a lot more stuff there, a lot more.
Clothing?
Yeah.
Whose garage is it?
I don't know. Harry and me were walking around out there, and we saw this truck pull up. Guy got out and then loaded some packing cases.
When was all this?
Last night. The way the garage looked, though, it wasn't the first time. The place was loaded. A lot of shirts, coats, suits, all kinds of things. Harry and me figured that we might as well help ourselves. But we didn't steal the stuff originally, not the first time.
What's the address where the garage is?
I don't know. Up on Shoredale Avenue, near the lake.
All right, we take you up there. Will you point it out for us?
Sure, I'll show you. I want to see him get his, get it real good.
What do you mean?
Imagine having a garage full of stolen things. Terrible, that's what it is.
Is that right?
Sure. The important thing is that you know that we didn't steal it the first time. You got to believe that. We didn't steal it the first time.
Is there really a difference?
A.M. We talked to the suspect that had been picked up with Kramer. He gave us substantially the same story that we'd gotten from the first boy. They both agreed to take us out to the garage where they'd found the stolen merchandise. Before we left the office, we put in a call to the clothing store, but there'd been no report from the stakeout on the roof. The two suspects directed us to drive out towards Silver Lake. We took the freeway out to Glendale Boulevard and turned right. We drove out to Loma Vista, and then we turned right again. The boys directed us up the hill and then onto a side street. We went about a half a block farther before they pointed out the house to us. We drove down the street and parked the car. Frank and I and the two suspects walked back to the house and into the rear of the yard. A two-car garage in the rear of the building was unlocked. We went in. Scattered around the place, we found several large packing cases of clothing. The labels on them were from some of the most exclusive men's stores in the city. There was no question about it. This was the plant for the stolen merchandise. Frank stood by the back door of the house, and I went up on the front porch and rang the bell.
Yeah?
You're Martin Hetman, aren't you?
Yeah, do I know you?
My name's Friday, police department.
Oh, yeah, I met you over at Dodge. What is it, some more questions?
Yeah, a few.
Kind of late to come around, isn't
it? Well, maybe a little.
You're just going to turn in. Can you wait till morning? I could come down to the police department.
No, I'm afraid we're going to have to talk tonight.
Oh. Okay, come on in.
Thank you. Anybody else in the house?
Just my wife and the kids.
Where are they?
Upstairs. They're all asleep. I told you I was just going to turn in.
Uh-huh. That garage out back, does that belong to you?
What?
The garage out in the back of the lot, is it yours?
Yeah, it's mine. Why?
What do you use it for?
What do you use a garage for? I keep the truck there.
Well, where's the truck tonight?
I left it at a service station down on Glendale Boulevard. Haven't it greased and the oil change. Why?
Anybody else use the garage besides you?
No.
Everything in it belonged to you?
You mind if I call my lawyer?
Well, you can do that from downtown.
You arresting me?
Yes, sir.
You found the stuff, huh?
We found it.
Got a cigarette?
Yeah, here. Here's a match.
I guess I should have gotten it out of the garage sooner.
Mm.
Figured on it first thing in the morning. When you talked to me this morning at Dodge, I should have known. Should have known right then. I didn't think you'd figure it this way.
All right, come on, get your coat.
Yeah, just let me finish the cigarette. At least your head had figured, going real good. Want to hear about it?
All right.
Well, I'm a plastering contractor, you know that.
Yeah, you told us that this morning.
Well, I bid on the jobs. All the contractors submit bids on how much we'll do the work for, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I always got in with a low bid. Used to drive the other contractors crazy. Never could figure out how I could come out on it. You see it, though, don't you?
Well, you tell me.
Well, you see, if a job would cost me, say, $3,500 to do, I'd put in a bid for $2,500. I always get the job, and then I'd steal the other $1,000 of merchandise, see?
Mm-hmm.
That way, I could come out, nobody get hurt.
What about the store owner?
They weren't sure. Only body in the middle was the insurance company, so you see, nobody really got hurt.
You about finished with that cigarette now?
Yeah, just about. You're pretty lucky, you know?
Is that right?
Yeah, sure. This was going to be the last time. I figured that after this, I'd be able to go it straight. Got my equipment all paid for, money in the bank. Figured I could go it straight. This was going to be the last time.
Well, you were right, weren't you?
Hey, you mind telling me something?
What's that?
How'd you tag me? How'd you find out?
We caught a couple of kids breaking into the garage. They'd stolen some of the clothes. They were picked up, and they pointed the place out to us.
Kids?
That's right.
Oh, about that. That's really terrible, isn't it?
What is?
Oh, this younger generation, I had legitimate reason. I was just trying to come out. Wasn't anybody going to get hurt my way. But those kids. I hope you're going to put them away for a long time, little thieves.
Come on, get your coat. Let's go.
That's just awful. No sense of honesty at all. I sure hate to think of what the world's coming to.
You want to tell me something, Hetman?
Sure. What do you want to know?
Well, you said you just stole the difference between what you agreed to do the job for and what it really ought to be. I got it right?
Yeah, just the difference.
Well, you hit the Dodge store pretty hard, didn't you? $12,000 worth?
Well, you see, that was a kind of a deal.
Well,
I didn't get anything on the last job, not a thing, so I had to make up for it, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I had to come out some way. Nobody'd expect me to take a complete loss, would they?
I wouldn't know about that.
I just wanted what I had coming.
Yeah, well, you're going to get it this time.
Martin Averill Hetman was tried and convicted of burglary in the second degree, 4 counts, and received sentence as prescribed by law. Burglary in the second degree is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period of not less than 1 nor more than 15 years, or by imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 1 year. Walter James Kramer and Samuel Arthur Nicholson were tried and convicted of burglary in the first degree. Burglary in the first degree is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period of not less than 5 years.
Dragnet is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, untuned to yesterday from the 29th of December, 1953, on NBC. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. And that does it for this hour of crime, untuned to yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.